Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Coming up next, we've got an interview you probably weren't expecting to hear today because you figure it's a lot NBA. Why are you bringing on an NFL Hall of Famer? Well, Michael Irvin knows an awful lot about competing at the highest level, of being injured in an opposing stadium that boos you, cheers your injury right the hell off the field. He knows an awful lot about sacrificing to play with teammates, what that means. And we got NFL OTAs. So we're going to have Michael Irvin, who we love talking to. It was really one of the most interesting conversations we had all week long, all year long throughout the NFL season last year. We're going to check in with Michael Irvin coming up at 4:20. We want you to be listening today. You're going to want to be listening at 5:30 today when we give you our final Warrior player's name to complete the four names you will need if you want to call in to try and win Game 6 tickets tomorrow morning on Joe Lowen Dibs. The fourth name will be revealed at 5:30. We've got a name game coming up tonight at 6 o'clock, and we're playing this name game for Rolling Stones tickets. I've heard of them.
Can we just set a point by which if nobody gets the name, I get the Stones tickets? Because I certainly can't afford to see that concert, but I would like to see the Rolling Stones before it's all over.
I'm sorry. All employees of 95.7 The Game are not eligible as contestants.
It's very frustrating.
You could quit.
That won't get me any closer to Rolling Stones tickets.
No, it really won't. You're gonna
if you got the ticket, you could just say, thank you, I hereby resign.
Oh, well.
I'm looking out for you.
Yeah, thank you. I'm going to think it through.
Honestly, I got to tell you, your look, everything I know about you, you're about two heartbeats away from being a roadie anyways, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, if there's some extra work that needs to be done around the stage, I'm good with gaffer's tape.
There you go.
Yeah.
Key grip, Matt Kolsky, ready to plug your amp in. 888-957-9570 is the number. We do have Michael Irvin coming up in just a little bit. The news today that Kevin Durant underwent successful surgery on his ruptured Achilles tendon is the best news we've had for Kevin Durant, obviously, in a really long time. Anyone who wants to assign concern that Kevin Durant had this surgery in New York, don't. It's where his preferred surgeon is. There is nothing to glean from the fact that he had this surgery in New York. It is not an indicator that the Knicks are now a front runner for it. I mean, just everyone needs to take a breath and relax a little bit. Wanda Durant was on Good Morning America today.
I talked with them probably about 5 to 10 minutes afterwards, and he just told me not to cry because, you know, I know he worked so hard to get back to play, and he just told me he was going to be okay and don't worry.
It's a devastating moment for a family that you would think doesn't have to prepare for a lot of devastating moments in a career that has already, you know, earned more dollars than they could ever spend over several lifetimes. But if you take the money out of it, you know, there's something to be said for professional accomplishments. And, you know, a man needs a job. A woman needs a job. Everyone needs a purpose in life. Kevin Durant's purpose in life is to play basketball. And that sounds a little trite, but it's not. It's kind of awesome. Kevin Durant's purpose is to give everything he can to this game. And it's going to be so frustrating for him to have to shelve it all for 12 months in the name of rehab, which is tedious and painful and psychologically torturous throughout the entire process. And you can go into this, fellas, with the single greatest attitude that you could ever have. If being an active player on the greatest team having the most amount of fun probably ever can become a tedious day at the office, what is rehab going to be for this guy? I really do. I feel for what he has to go through. He says he's built for it. He can do it. I'm going to wish him luck doing it, man. It's going to be rough. 12 months at least until we see him on the court again.
Yeah, give or take. I mean, and that's assuming no complications.
I mean, I think, boy, that, you know, that side of it, this is probably a conversation for next week, but wouldn't you think the level of desire to get him back at some point next season, however meaninglessly, will vary greatly depending on where he is?
Would you say there'd be more pressure in a new location than less pressure in this?
It's hard for me. I think I need to spend some time with it. But it certainly seems like different teams would have different priorities.
How about this? Any team that you think would go ahead and make the effort to sign Kevin Durant had designs on him being the missing ingredient in a playoff run.
Where, the title run.
Right. Where if the Warriors were, you know, to just lay back, their promise would be, well, hey, we're going to get you to a 3 seed at least, and then maybe if you can join us in the last round, we're you, I mean, what other team could possibly offer Kevin Durant a 12-month layoff with a chance to four-peat? If this, I mean, like, I don't want to count the three-peat until it happens, but, I mean, where is more pressure? I don't know. I haven't thought about it long enough, just like you, man. I cannot answer that.
It's hard to believe that somehow next week and the next month and a half have gotten even more interesting. And I don't want to be insensitive. Mostly, I just feel crappy that Kevin Durant has to deal with this. But what we do here is talk about sports and off seasons and where players are going and what the motivations are. And they're infinitely more complicated than they were a few days ago.
Yeah, the one thing I think we do know, of all the possible ramifications that branch out from this, is that nobody's rushing him back. It doesn't matter what the urgency is. I just want to finish the thought. Given what the Warriors are going through now, and given the way Kevin Durant has defined the last 2 years of NBA existence, teams are basically going to say, you tell us. You tell us.
But you don't think his timeline might be different depending on, I mean, we've seen this is a guy who thinks about a lot of things. He brings a lot of different concepts into his calculus on decision making.
Yes, but given what he has gone through, given what he's going to go through, I think caution is going to guide every decision for until he gets back to full time. I'm 100%, just because he'll never know for sure. The way none of us will ever know for sure what caused the Achilles.
How about this? Let's say he gets to full-time 100% with 2 weeks left in the season. Don't you think if he's on a Knicks team that's not going to make the playoffs, he might sit those 2 weeks, whereas if he's on a Warriors team that could be headed to the finals again, he might try to come back? I'm just throwing out random hypotheticals. There's just so much more to consider with this injury.
Right. I think that's all part of the calculus, but I think the first thing that everybody is going to come away from this with is
caution.
A new notion of you got to get back because we need you. Because he just lost a season of his playing life.
Yeah, his prime.
And like I said, nobody will ever really know unless there is some smoking gun that his doctors found when they did the surgery that the Warriors didn't rush him back or that they did. No one knows. But if I'm Kevin Durant, the thing that's going to guide my choice is going to have a lot to do with if I go out there and I'm not fully and 100% green-lighted in everybody's head, including my own, I'm not going out. I don't care what the situation is.
I mean, that's the situation Steve Kerr says they just had.
Kevin checked all the boxes, and he was cleared to play by everybody involved. Now, would we go back and do it over again? You're damn right. But that's easy to say after the results. When we gathered all the information, our feeling was the worst thing that could happen would be a re-injury of the calf. That was the advice and the information that we had. And at that point, once Kevin was cleared to play, you know, he was comfortable with that. We were comfortable with that. So the Achilles came as a complete shock.
Now, I just think it's very safe to assume that all, you know, injury intersections that are showing you an amber light, instead of flooring it to get through them, Kevin will probably, you know, tap that brake and proceed to that amber light. very, very cautiously before trying to blow the intersection to get to the next green. Very interesting times coming up for sure.
Maybe, but I think, as you say, that may have been what he thought he did. We just don't know.
And who knows what lesson he feels that he has now taught himself or he needs to glean from this and how he's going to apply it to his future. All of it. Look, when it comes to being a teammate who has risked an awful lot for his teammates, done an awful lot to be booed off of a playing surface by an opposing crowd, Michael Irvin understands it all. He also understands, would OTAs mean to an NFL player? We got to ask him about the Raiders being on Hard Knocks, what he thinks of the offseason that the 49ers have had. We haven't talked to Michael Irvin since the Super Bowl. We're going to talk to him next. And we are going to start with the NBA playoffs because he has been all over it. They've been fascinating, and this man gets it all. Don't you go anywhere. Michael Irvin joins us next here on 95.7 The Game. Matt Kolsky.
Now back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
Good to have you back here on the Damon Bruce Show along with Ray Ratto and Matt Kolsky. We're bringing you the Hall of Famer Michael Irvin. Why are we doing that? Because this man is a sports fan through and through. He's all over the NBA Finals. We got OTAs happening in the NFL as well. And it's always good to say hello to Michael Irvin, one of our favorite guests. And Michael, honestly, the last time we talked to you, there were vocal concerns that had you worried, us worried. Before we get into any sports, the declaration of cancer-free was fantastic. We're so happy to hear that and share the good news, man. Welcome back. There is no stopping the mouth of the South.
Yeah, and let me thank everybody out there, man, because obviously, and it's a community. We're a football NFL community. Got so many well wishes, so many prayers. Somebody asked me, somebody, Mike, said, Michael, why would you tweet that out? Why would you put that out about cancer and all that you were going through? I said, the Bible says, wherever two or three are gathered, he's in the midst. I figured this was so serious, I was so scared. I didn't want two or three. I wanted 2 or 3 million. I needed everybody. I needed all hands on deck, all on knees on floor, and get him in the midst. And it worked. It worked. I want you to understand this now. When I laid in that hospital bed and we were going through all that tests, the devil had my mind. And I always consider myself a strong-minded fighter. But he had my mind, and it wasn't a matter of me thinking, do I have cancer or not? It was just, okay, at what stage am I in? Am I going to die or not? Because the devil kept repeating to me, you remember now, I'm undefeated. I took your dad. I took your brother. I took your sister. I took everybody in your family. I took as cancer, and now I'm about to take you. So when we got the results back and they all came back clean, It had to be a miracle, and it came from all the prayers. So I appreciate all the prayers from everyone that sent a word up toward God.
Michael, very, very good news. Look, in terms of sports prayers in the last, 24, 48 hours, we've heard so many for Kevin Durant. And this is why we wanted to get in touch with you, because you were all over this. You understand the fire that burns in a world-class competitive athlete. You understand the pressure of being in a championship moment. And, as a lot of people try to cry rotten about this or something fishy went down, sometimes it's easily as explainable as the player plays. And that's pretty much what you were saying on Twitter.
Right. It's crazy. I don't get people. I don't get it, because I don't think people fully understand the commitment each man makes on any team, on all of those teams, man. You make a commitment to all of those guys that you spend every waking minute with. My commitment is, I would give you all I have all the time. If I can go, I'm going. If I can go, I'm going. Now, you put all of the decorations on this tree, down 3-1, supposed to be a great run, a chance, in the fifth finals, winning 3 in a row here. Now, KD has been back-to-back. He's won 2 finals MVP, and now he gets an opportunity to come out and be a savior of one of the greatest teams of all time. And we all, not just we love the game, we want to win. Yeah, you're making all the money, but you want your place in history too. This would have set KD up on his place in history had he come back and they go on and win this game and win this series. It would have been incredible, incredible. How can you expect a competitor not to take that challenge? I get tired of listening to people saying, what was he doing out there? Like, shut the hell up. What are you talking about? Do you know what it is to commit to that man across from you and then go out and write history, the opportunity, the way he had a chance to write history? I'm with KD on that. I would have done this exact same thing he did. I would have got my butt back out there. That's just the only way to be. The only way to be. And now let's pray that he'll return and get healthy. But we can't have it both ways. We can't call a man soft. We can't call a man all these names. And then when he shows that kind of gut, that kind of grit to give his team that kind of glory, then we start saying, wow, that was stupid. He shouldn't have played, or they shouldn't have played. Back up with all of that mess.
I'm glad you put it that way, Michael, because that's the thing that gets me the most is the same people who want to call him soft for not being back soon enough are going to say it was irresponsible for him to play. And I'm curious, how do you see the coverage of Durant overall this year? Because in my view, in much the same way, he's tried to keep his head down. He's tried to make it about this year, but people kind of won't let him. And everything's been about, well, does he care about his teammates and all that? And as a guy who was in a locker room with a lot of volatile personalities and sort of saw that dynamic, how much do you think that really affected the locker room? And how much is that just a media creation?
Well, it's a media creation because we got now. Listen, let me tell you, I'm not saying that it's always hunky dory in the locker room. You got all alpha males playing together on a team. That's why Golden State has been so great for so many years, because they've been able to capitulate one man to the other and let somebody else be the star no matter what. It's just about winning games. And KD wanted to play in that style, and he went to that style to play. I just get blown away with the didymus. The didymus. That's the double talk and talking out both sides of your mouth. Either the man is this or the man is that. And so even if you said he was soft and you thought he was soft and he's this, he's that, and then he shows you that kind of commitment, don't come back now and say, well, he's tired. He should have been out there. Just say, Let me be honest. I thought he was soft. That shows me something right there for him to make that kind of commitment. It's okay to say that. It's okay to say that. They feel like they got to win. I called him soft. He showed me he wasn't soft. So now I got to say he was stupid for being out there anyway. Like, stop. Let's just stop doing that. That was a hell of a thing that KD did and the commitment he made to those guys, man. I got to honor that. I gotta honor that those are the kind of guys I want to play with if ever I'm playing ball.
I want to talk for a second about the athlete as patient. On the assumption that a number of people were in the room helping make this decision, and you're the athlete, what would make you say, "All right, I shouldn't play because I'm convinced that this person told me I shouldn't"? Or does the player say, I insist on playing until the coach basically says, well, I'm the only one who could put you in the game and I'm not letting you go?
Here's the thing. Honestly, if he doesn't have that approach, I don't know that you want him around. I'd rather have to, whoa, pull your rein and stop you than push you in the back to push you out. Like, come on, man, let's go. Let's go. Get out there. I'd much rather have the guy that said, no, not now. No, I got. Let me help you. Not now. But everybody had a hand in this, and all the doctors and everybody, they obviously thought it was okay to play, and he had done some things. He felt good. You know, I just don't want us going back and forth with it. I think he made the right decision. Now it's time to move on, and let's see what can happen in game six tomorrow night, you know, because now those guys got new lift too. Before, they were waiting on KD to come back, Now they know he's not coming back. So the shift is, did you see the commitment he made? If I'm in that locker room, I'm walking around, hey, man, he made for us. Let's make sure we make a commitment back for him tonight in this game and win this game on Thursday night.
And let me follow up on that. And now that he's had his surgery, typically, I mean, is there kind of a rule of thumb about how long an athlete gets to feel sorry for his predicament before he starts re-engaging with the healing, with the, all right, I know I'm out, but I got to get going somehow. I mean, how long is it reasonable to expect any athlete, not just him, but any athlete to just be down and stay down for a while?
Let me tell you, man, I went through this when I tore up my knee. And I tore my knee up my second year, ACL. I go in, and I don't think I was prepared for the operation. You know, I'd never really been hurt. And I have the operation. Right after we have it, the doctor comes in. He said, Michael, let me see you raise your right leg. I couldn't lift my leg off the bed. I couldn't lift it off the bed. And I went into such a depression. I went into such a depression. Oh, my God. Because I wasn't prepared for it. Because I thought, if I can't lift my leg, I'll never be able to play. Ever since then, and that was in 89, I tell any guy walking into an operation, your recovery is all about your approach walking in. If you walk in, say, oh, okay, this is it. This is just a setback. I'm about to beat it down and come right back. You'll bounce back, and you'll come back stronger. But if you go in like I went in, my recovery took longer because I let it get me in a depressed place. And going in, I was in a depressed place. And then when I couldn't lift my leg, it took me to new depths. I mean, new depths, man. And so the mindset going in is the most important thing. You have to know, I'm about to go whoop this challenge just like I beat everything else. That's crucial for Kevin Durant.
Hall of Famer, the playmaker, Michael Irvin, now part of the Radio.com family as a sports NFL insider. Insider reports are brought to you by the 2019 Mercedes-Benz A-Class. Michael, when it comes to cheering an injured player, unfortunately, you might be the best person in the world to talk about this. I'll never forget the treatment that you got in Philadelphia. I remember them pelting you with snowballs as you're stretchered off the field. Obviously, fan behavior in Toronto when KD went down became quite a topic. What is it like to receive that? Did that scar you at all?
Well, you know, it's so funny because, you know, I was laying, I was paralyzed. You know,
yeah.
My thoughts were not on the thoughts of what people were saying at the time. And I was on, you know, my family and on my kids and all of that and getting back to them. So you really don't hear it. You really don't hear it. Now, I laid up in the hospital that night and I was watching the news and I saw, you know, everybody was talking about that on the news. But I really didn't think about it. But I thought about it the other night when I saw it with KD. And I said, oh, my God. Oh, are they? And I think the Toronto crowd thought, okay, he re-injured the calf. He re-injured the calf. That means he'll leave the game, which to them means we just won a championship.
Right.
So it was clapping, I think, for that. We just won a championship. Now, after those guys, Lowry and Bach, all of them, told him to calm down. You see what they started chanting KD's name, leaving. That was their way of saying, oh, we're sorry, we didn't understand the depth of it. I said to myself then, you'd have never gotten out of Philadelphia.
No. I mean, they boo Santa Claus in Philadelphia.
Even when they realize, hey, he's on a stretcher. This may be serious. He can't move. They still ain't going to start saying no name or anything else. You know, the clapping got louder and when they found all that out is what I said. So I think we have to be careful in measuring these two fan bases.
If we do. We absolutely do. Michael Irvin here on 95.7 The Game. So OTAs underway all over the NFL. Let me just ask, what did they mean to you earlier in your career and then as you became – in the middle of your career, and then as the veteran portion of your career took over, what did they do? OTAs mean less the longer you play?
From the standpoint, because OTAs is about teaching guys your system, you know, from your system. So to me, it never really became less because the one key factor to winning it and winning a sustaining amount of years is you make sure you have a nucleus that's great. And then that nucleus has to make sure that all people understand the way we do things. This is how we do it. And if you can't do it this way, titty-tat, pity-pat,
beat your feet and get the hell out. That's what, you know, so those OTAs help you set those ways. I was going to be at OTAs. I'm going to be all at all the workouts because I'm trying to set the way for how we are going to practice, how we are going to play, and how we are going to prepare. So to me, they never got boring. They never got boring because I had a new group of we call them freshmen or rookies coming in each year that I had to teach how we would do things. Let me tell you what I used to do. I used to walk through the locker room butt naked when all the young guys come in. Butt naked. This is a true story. I used to walk through the locker room and tell them, now you see, look at this body. Look at the butt naked. Look at this body. I said, understand right now, do not blame your mom and dad. You will never look this way. But that doesn't mean we can't win football games. And all you receivers, I would tell all you young receivers who are making the team, call your mother, daddy, brother, uncle, sister, niece, and nephew and tell them you made the Dallas Cowboys and they watch you on TV, but don't expect you to catch any passes. That's Mike Irvin's job. That's what you know. You know, and I would do it only to break the ice with all the guys because I'm trying to set the way of how we do things. We're going to have fun. But we will win games. Oh. That's why I never got tired of OTA.
In the animal kingdom, they call it presenting.
That's what it was, buddy. I had to put it out.
I want to ask you, obviously we focus a ton on the Niners around here, and for the second straight year at least, it feels like going into the season, the spread of different possibilities is just huge, you know, depending on how guys look coming back from injury. But I see Peter King rank them 7th in power rankings, and I start to wonder if maybe I'm not underrating this thing. If Garoppolo really is healthy, how high do you think the Niners' ceiling is?
Man, it'll be interesting to see. Let's just say it'll be interesting to see. We talked about, and I know you know the Niners are man. You picked up some great pieces. I thought some great pieces, and if Garoppolo gets back to what he was pre-injury. I think it's going to be a very interesting year. Even when you look around your division, you know, you look around what's happening with Seattle, and you're going to have problems with the Rams for quite a few years. You're going to have that battle, and you look around, you say, wow, okay, we got a shot at getting some. You got a young kid in Arizona. You have a shot now if you could get Gronk back to where he was, really, 2 years ago, prior to getting his big contract, and that's all this will be about. That's all this will be about for the 49ers. You got to get Gronk back.
The Oakland Raiders, on the other hand, have been hooked up to Hard Knocks, and
aren't we blessed? Aren't we blessed?
Well,
the greatest call in the world. Are you joking?
Yeah. I don't know how much John Gruden can you stomach in a week.
No, man, you don't know what you should, what everybody should do over there is you should have written a letter to whoever made the decision to give it to the Raiders, and you should have said, "Thank you. We won't have a problem coming up with content for the next couple months. We appreciate you helping us. Thank you." But that's what it's going to be. It's going to be great drama with AB. People will be watching to see the kind of relationship AB has with Carr, seeing, you know, because of what went on with Ben. You know, AB all up in social media. And it's going to be incredible. It'll be an incredible watch. You got that at the head coach with John Gruden and Mike Mayock, my old buddy from the network now. You know, he's the kind of guy that even though he does media and he's done media and worked in TV, when he's trying to put a team together and you put a camera on him sometimes, he looks like the guy that walks out and says, get off my lawn. That's exactly what. So you expect to see that look coming out of him also with those cameras around because it's going to be interesting to watch. I thought out of all the teams, I know people wanted even Cleveland again. I thought, no way, the Raiders were the right pick.
But as good a cartoon as it's going to be for the audience, what are the chances that it gets in the way of trying to start the rebuilding process with a roster that is still in a fair amount of turmoil? Is this short-term really great and long-term stupid, or am I being too weird?
Well, no, I understand the point in which in the direction you're trying to take it. But I look at it on the other side. We're in a social media world where everybody and all these young kids, they're deep into social media. And now you give them an opportunity to say, hey, let's work and get better. And by working hard and getting better, you also get a chance to get more followers because people are going to be tuned in. People are going to be tuned. You got to use this as an asset. Don't make it a liability. Receive it and use it as an asset. And I think John Green is smart enough to do that. You know, when I see a guy that's not working hard, not doing, say, hey, you gonna put that on, you know, show the world that you don't work hard. You know, those cameras are following us everywhere. You gonna let the world see that you just a chump? Are you gonna stand up and do something? You see what I'm saying? You use this as a tailwind. Don't let it be a headwind, because that's what everybody expects it to be, is a headwind. But I'll make sure I use it as a tailwind. And John Gruden is smart enough to do that.
Michael Irvin, let me just tell you, when it comes to content creation, ain't nobody better than you. Thank you very, very much. Always great to talk to you, and we look forward to doing it again every week this coming NFL season, man. Thank you so much, Michael.
Always good to chat with you guys, buddy.
Very, very nice. Playing him off with a little music. That is a well-produced segment right there. I'll tell you, I'm actually a little bit more excited to jump right into the NFL season than I am to, like, dive back into baseball season between now and football season. Great stuff from Michael Irvin. And I tell you, as we, you know, we joke around, we ask about what Hard Knocks is really going to mean for the Raiders. He's right. He is right in terms of you got to look at it as a positive. I mean, here it is. It's going to be there. How do you use it to motivate? How do you use it as a tailwind, not as a headwind? I love that line from Michael Irvin. I really did. And whether the Raiders can do that or not, well, we'll all sit back and crunch our popcorn and watch, I guess.
Well, they can't do that. But let's just cut to the chase on that. They won't be able to restrain their own individual impulses to make this about Richie Incognito or Antonio Brown or John Gruden. And Mark Davis is probably the only one we can expect to keep a low profile. And even then, I'm not
sure. I was about to say, I'm not so sure about that.
And if you have people vying for attention, that means you have competition within the team that isn't useful. And that, as much as anything, is why I think, as much as it's, you know, a great thing to, you know, watch while you're working a bottle of wine, it's a terrible idea for this team, especially the way it's currently constructed under the guy doing the construction. It's a disaster. And that'll be the fun part, because once the show's over, they've got to deal with the residual effects of it. And that will be a disaster, too.
Yeah, but most of that will take place in a totally different city.
No. We get one more year of dumpster fire.
Yeah, but that's
this
fun.
This one just got some accelerant tossed on it.
But can I drop a what if?
A what if what?
What if they're good? What if in some bizarro world that my mind really has trouble visiting, this, like, it works? And what do you know? Derek Carr's good again. Antonio Brown's made him confident again. They got a tackle that prevents Derek Carr's leg from snapping again. Like, all of a sudden, John Gruden, like, a year back, is kind of caught up to speed on what the NFL's trying to do again. Like, I don't look at me going glass half full on the Raiders, for goodness sakes. Ray?
You sound like Albie with the Giants.
Well, then we got to go to commercial. No. I think that's a little unfair. There are players on this Raiders team that have done really great things in the past. That's a fact. Their offensive line should be better. The quarterback has success to refer to in his past and a better set of weapons than he's had in a while. The defense has significantly more talent than it's had in a while. They ought to be better. Expecting them to be good might be a little much.
Sorry, you guys. You're just Oakland haters. Well,
I love Oakland.
That is absolutely incorrect. And if you're looking for a little love for Oakland, we're going to give it to you when we come back to talk about how important tomorrow night is for the city of Oakland. And, you know, if you never get a second chance to make a first impression, Guess what? Golden State Warriors, you will not get a second chance to make a last impression. Let's make it a good one. We're coming on back with that, courtesy of Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises. Also want to tell you that this hour is also brought to you by Friedman's Appliance, a trusted name in the Bay Area since 1922. Visit Friedman'sAppliance.com today.
Now back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
The way people frame conversations around championship moments have always driven me a little bit nuts. Welcome back to the Damon Bruce Show. Ray Ratto and Matt Kolsky along. And guys, you know, I'm sure you've heard this, that, you know, who's got more to win? Who's got more to lose? And we talk about this all the time. Who's got more on the line in this title moment? Well, the same two teams have the exact same prize on the line. Sure, one team's trophy case could be more robust, and it's a continuing of a conversation. But it really is still a unique conversation unto itself. That's what each championship is. And there's never been a team with more on the line than the other team has on the line when you're playing for the same championship. I don't like when teams start shirking responsibility and say, like, we got nothing left to prove. Like, isn't that the very opposite of what sports are? Isn't sports a daily opportunity to prove how great you are over and over and over again? And so when an athlete starts saying, like, oh, man, we got nothing left to prove, it makes me back away a little bit, going like, well, that's kind of the wrong attitude to have. Unless, of course, it's being applied by a guy who could actually make that argument. Under the circumstances, Steph Curry made this argument yesterday. And it was phenomenal, talking about how the Warriors really don't have much left to prove with any particular 48 minutes or one or two games of basketball.
I mean, we've made a lot of different statements over the course of these 5 years. And win or lose, I don't feel like we need to prove anything anymore. It's just about, can we get the job done or not? And obviously, like I said, tonight was an emotional roller coaster from start to finish. And we have another game to play on Thursday, so we'll be ready for it. But there's no more statements need to be made about who we are as a team and our heart and our competitiveness and whatnot. We want to win this championship. We're going to give everything we got, but I think we're done with, you know, proving people wrong or making bold statements with our play. People know who we are.
I'm looking to glean a little something off of that. I love the confidence. I love the self-assuredness of that statement. And I also think it's an indicator that they're just playing house money and lose tomorrow. I mean, I hope that they do. I hope that they come out with that. We've said all we can say. This is just about a night to celebrate a little bit of basketball, and if we force a game seven at the end of it, huzzah. If not, you kind of know who we are and what we've done and how this unraveled. And never forget to tell the story of how it unraveled. It took an Achilles unraveling to really explain it.
I think it's more a statement about our fixation with legacies and how every game is a reinvention of your legacy. And what I take from what he said was, we've built the legacy we're going to have, right? We win tonight, we win Sunday. I mean, it's one more jewel on the crown. We win tonight, we lose Sunday. We're still a dominant team in an era. And I think the value in what he says is we're not being graded for our worth as players based on this game. If they lose, if they get hammered tomorrow night, if they lose 122-89, they are who they are. I mean, this does not diminish anything they have accomplished up till then. It's a pretty vicious knee in the groin, but they get over it.
It'd be an inglorious ending.
Yeah, I think they've established who and what they are as a collective, and the players have established who and what they are as individuals for the most part. I mean, a guy like Jordan Bell has not yet created a legacy. But for the most part, Curry's legacy is what it is. Thompson's legacy is what it is. Iguodala's, Green's, even Durant's. They're all what they are. And the outcome of this game can either, you know, put another layer of gold paint on a gold brick, or it can just be, well, they couldn't finish that because they had half their team. So, I mean, I get what he's saying.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a bit of a false construction just because we're talking about idiots. Like, Steph Curry is talking about and to stupid morons. Because if you needed Monday to tell you what these dudes were made of, yeah, you're either dumb or deliberately misunderstanding.
No, like, you don't want to see it. You go right, out of your way
exactly.
to not see it.
So he's right. They don't have anything more to prove. But also, they didn't before Monday. They didn't before this year. And the other side of that is, even though they have nothing to prove, morons will still be asking them to prove stuff. So, well, Curry's right, but he's also... And I feel this when I say it, because I've said those same words on this show. The people need to stop. You know, after this, no one can ever throw dirt on them again. And I mean it in a sense of you can't reasonably do it, but as Ray always points out, someone's going to do it.
That's why chasing the other people's opinion of you is ultimately pointless. It is, and I think athletes get to learn this all the time because they get the same question framed the same way wherever they're at. Whoever wins Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final tonight will be asked, how does this change your legacy? How does this, you know, enhance your legacy? The legacy takes care of itself. You know, all you can do really is play. Right. We get absorbed by the stuff we think is important, and therefore we decide that the athletes think that's important too. And typically it's not.
888-957-9570. Another legacy that has already been secured. Need no more evidence to celebrate it. I am so glad that we're going to hear Blow the Whistle. We're going to hear it live at halftime tomorrow. Because the last time I heard Blow the Whistle at Oracle Arena can't be the last time I heard Blow the Whistle. It was sad. It felt like a funeral dirge because everyone was like, oh, my God, what is happening? And they played it at the 8-minute mark, and instead of getting the band, you know, the whole place moving, it was like, oh, this is the last time we're going to hear it. And we weren't ready for that. We're braced now. I'm ready for it. I have mentally prepared myself as much as humanly possible to say goodbye to Oracle Arena tomorrow night. You know, we had two last games. They were both losses. We were sort of bracing for it, and it felt incomplete. I will say this. In a way, I'm applying what Steph Curry said about his legacy to Oracle's legacy. Would it be great to send it out on a win? Yeah. It would be awesome to walk out down the steps into the parking lot. Everybody on what will hopefully be like a warm summer's night. Everyone been trying to be the last person out of the building, last person out of the row, last person out of the lot, last person out of the press conference. I hope that that happens. But if it doesn't, like, I'm ready. I am ready to make my peace with how this ends, no matter how it ends. You know, for a building that saw a lot more losing than winning throughout the years, the winning that we got at the end, like, it was so served to us at a beautifully historic level. It was so fun that, you know, look, there's no way you can enjoy the sweet without knowing what the bitter was. And in a way, that building gave you so much bitter, so much bitter to consider as you walked into this last five-year remarkable run of Warriors basketball that no matter what happens tomorrow night, like you just gotta walk out of there feeling romantic and good about the whole thing. I mean, what did Vin Scully say at the very last call he ever had? You know, don't be sad it's over. Be happy that it happened at all. It actually sounded more like Tim Roy than Vin Scully. But, you know, Chase Center is going to serve us as a state-of-the-art facility, but I'm not sure that the romance that we've attached to Oracle Arena can ever really be topped by any NBA building to a Warriors fan. The place has been special for years and years and years, and it was special long before the winning arrived.
Well, and for all the losing that people attach to this, this building's record with the Warriors since 68, when I first started playing the odd game here or there, they won at 64%. So mostly it was when most of the really bad crap happened on the road. I mean, there were a bunch of bad teams, yeah. But for the most part, people went in sober or high, came out sober or higher, and they got what they wanted two-thirds of the time. So, you know, again, you make your own legacy. I mean, if you had a good time there, fine. If this one result, if it turns out poorly for you, if it's going to ruin how you look at it, well, then fine. It ruins how you look at it. Just, you know, make your own news.
Yeah. Oracle, I've talked about what it means to me. I do think it's a little more than just people went to see the opposing team back in the day. I think this is a pretty loyal fan base. We do this stuff a lot, trying to characterize whole fan bases and, well, all the Toronto Raptors fans are this or that. Oh, they're such nice people. Oh, they're horrible for booing KD. Yeah, there are people who went to see all the good opposing talent because Oakland loves basketball. But there are also people who enduringly went to root on a bad basketball team. And those people are now rooting on one of the greatest teams of all time, and that's how the building is closed down. It all does feel pretty romantic and nice to me. And I know that probably is not up Ray's alley, but I get nice feelings from it, personally.
And you get to. Yeah.
Thank you.
I agree with your feeling of how you leave that building.
I appreciate that.
But I will say this. There were a lot of years where they drew very poorly in that building. This was not a love affair that began and never waned. There were long stretches where people weren't enjoying it that much because they didn't go. So, you know, historically, you know, when we're talking about this, there is no historical to it. It's how did you feel about it at the end of it? And that's really the only thing to imply. If you live next door to a guy who thought it was a complete and utter drag, well, that's his memory. Take your memory and be happy with it.
You don't think Oracle did better during lean years than other places would have?
Statistically, no. There were years when they were 27th out of 29 in terms of attendance.
Yes, but there were also years where they were 27th out of 29 in terms of performance and 10th in attendance.
Not that many, though. I only know this because I looked it up.
Okay.
I mean, there were long stretches where people just said, I'm not going to go. I care less. But that's like every place else. The point I'm trying to make is you make your own memories and you hold on to them because they're yours.
As Tim Roy said, we get one more dance in the old barn, and I'm very, very happy. At halftime, we all get to dance to this. I'm just going to tell you right now, if you are going as a credentialed media member, you're going to tell yourself at halftime, you got to go get a piece of information. It will help you cover the game better. If you seriously leave your seat during this, tomorrow night, you are a moron. That's going to be great. E40, I think, is going to join him. I think we're going to get a little Mr. Fab with Too Short. And I'm holding out hope for MC Hammer before it's all said and done. Welcome to your 5 o'clock hour.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.